All right, page 68, bottom of the page. We already talked about protect, general protectors, possums, predators. The Bible uses the language, good shepherds. They protect the flock and lay down their lives for the sheep. Hirelings run away at the first sign of trouble. They don't care about the sheep and are only in it for what they can get out of it. Bad shepherds who devour the flock and use the sheep for their own self-indulgence and pleasure. So that's the biblical language. Sheep don't have to worry when the good shepherd is with them. He will take care of them and lead them to quiet waters and green pastures. He will defend and protect them.
Yes.
He won't attack them verbally with their intense, no sticky love words. So, and we're not going to look at the predator, possum, protector because we've already thoroughly covered that through the last 3 weeks. The statement, if we don't admit our weakness, we can't grow. It's true. If you want to be set free, you have to know the truth. You have to, and know doesn't mean head knowledge. It means to experience relationally that you experience, oh man, look at this. And see that you aren't Christ-like in this situation and own it, right? Then we can grow. Let's talk about gentle protectors because that's the goal again. Joy levels increase around people who respond to weakness with gentleness and kindness. It's important that weak people feel safe to admit mistakes and seek help. If we don't receive kindness and validation from someone who's happy to be with us, we will experience shame. And when we're afraid, we will be shamed for our weakness. When we're afraid that we will be shamed for our weakness, mistakes, etc., we will hide our problems or we'll fight back, depending on your makeup. General protectors, leaders are emotionally mature leaders. That means they can operate in those relational skills. Doesn't mean you're operating in all 19, but you're operating in most of them. So they're emotionally mature leaders who understand how to keep relationships more important than the problems. They don't wear masks. In other words, they don't pretend. They remain true to who they are in Christ, even in times of upset, and they're able to return to joy after feeling upsetting emotions. They help others do the same thing. They have a large joy capacity, which enables them to deal with tough situations without getting overwhelmed. Protector leaders often don't realize that they are unique. In their mind, it's just who they are. They don't have to think about what they're doing. They just do it because that's who they are. So if you want to have one paragraph that describes to you what a general protector does and looks like, that's the paragraph. Triggers and masks. There are many reasons we struggle to act like our true self, but there are two reasons that stand out, triggers and a mask. When someone pushes our buttons and we go from being a Dr. Jekyll to a Mr. Hyde, we are most likely triggered. We wear masks to make ourselves look stronger or better or more mature or whatever, more acceptable. Some of us have worn a mask for so long that we can't distinguish between the mask and our true self. To understand how triggers work, imagine that you have a powder keg that contains implicit and explicit memories inside of you. And that's the place you stuff all the pain and problems that you haven't dealt with and resolved. As long as nobody touches that barrel, that powder keg, you can go about your day like a normal human being. But when someone does something that triggers us, the powder keg erupts and whatever you've packed inside of it comes out, and we suddenly become someone that nobody wants to be with, which is the opposite of joy. Most of us deal with those things that trigger us by avoiding or pretending they don't exist. Some people work hard to keep others at a distance, so there's less chance of exploding. We may create a routine where we feel safe and won't allow others to change or disrupt it. The first step in resolving problems is to recognize and admit that you have one. You gotta realize it.
Amen.
Begin to notice when you get triggered and what sets it off. You are triggered when you shut down relationally. You blow up relationally. You feel like running away. You want to punch someone or something. Or you overreact to the situation. Most of the time when we're triggered, we aren't just reacting to the present event. The powder keg stuffed with past hurts and emotions comes spewing out and mixes with your present day emotions. As a result, your verbal logical explainer tells you a story as to why you're upset based on the present day situation. That story doesn't include the fact that past subconscious pain from implicit memories have joined your present day emotions. So you strike out verbally, emotionally, or physically, believing that the present event is what's causing your upset. That is so true, it's so real. The job of your VLE is to come up with explanations that will help you organize and make sense out of your experience and the world around you. Your VLE is constantly coming up with explanations that help you make sense out of your life. And the VLE usually works so quickly and smoothly that you won't even notice that that's happening. But if your VLE starts with distorted and or inadequate information, your VLE can come up with profoundly flawed explanations. And that happens, and you believe it's true. You don't even know. The point is that your VLE will quickly and smoothly come up with an explanation for why and how your current circumstances are causing you to experience your triggered thoughts and emotions. The confabulated, flawed VLE explanations will feel valid and accurate. And it takes a lot of practice to be able to perceive the difference between valid explanations and flawed, fabricated explanations. Because sometimes the explanation is accurate. If your VLE brings that information to you based on truth, it'll be valid. But the problem is if it's tapped into past pain, it's not going to be valid. When unresolved trauma, implicit memory, and VLE explanations come together, you will try to resolve your triggered pain by focusing on the triggers in the present as if they are the source of your upsetting emotions. And if the trigger happens to be caused by another person's behavior, you will try to resolve your painful thoughts and emotions by trying to make that person change their terrible behavior. I want you to highlight, underline, star it, that last sentence. That is illegal. For you to try to control somebody else's behavior is witchcraft. It's illegal. You don't have the right to do that. Yahweh doesn't even do it. So,
unless it's a child.
You correct a child, yes. And teach and train a child, yes. I'm talking about adult to adult. When unresolved trauma, oh, I read that one. Another important part of this whole implicit memory and VLE confabulation picture is that when someone does something that triggers an unresolved traumatic memory in me, it will feel intensely true that the one who triggered me should take responsibility for causing my pain. And sadly, I won't just want her or him to take responsibility for the pain caused by his or her behavior, but I will want him or her to confess, apologize, and make restitution to me as though he or she caused all of my pain. And if that person doesn't do that, I will not feel heard, understood, validated, safe, or ready for reconciliation until that person makes it right. Because I believe the person who triggered me in the present is 100% guilty. I won't look for any underlying memories in me that might be adding to my pain. And like I said, that creates an impossible situation for reconciliation. Because if I'm innocent, and I just innocently said a sentence, and it triggered you, and it pulls all this implicit memory forward, and a VLE story comes up, and you're gonna want me to apologize, own it, confess, you're gonna want the whole, and whatever else. But if I just innocently said, that chair is blue, I didn't do anything wrong. And so I can't apologize. It would be a lie. It would be not true. So now we've got an irreconcilable situation. What do I do if I get triggered? Number one, ask Yahweh. I go, help. It's the best prayer there is. Help. Ask Yahweh if there's a memory that got triggered. Is there some kind of pain in me that hasn't ever been comforted? Number two, ask Yahweh to show you the truth about that event, that memory that he shows you. Ask for help to process it. And when you see the memory, look around the memory for Yahweh or Yeshua, the Holy Spirit, because he's everywhere all the time. So he was there when you were hurt. Doesn't mean he approved it, doesn't mean he caused it. But he said, I'll never leave you, I'll never forsake you. After you've received his healing and his comfort, share with your people what Yahweh did for you. Isolation kills growth. Underline it, highlight it. Isolation kills growth. It's important that you share with others what the Lord did concerning the powder keg. It helps cement the truth in your brain on both the right and the left side, which makes that a relational memory and not just facts. You actually store memory in both hemispheres of your brain, the left and the right. The left hemisphere stores the facts. The right hemisphere stores, it's actually more accurate if you pull up a memory from the right hemisphere, because it stores the information, the event, the facts, plus the feelings, the emotions. What you believe to be true is stored in the right hemisphere. And like I said so many times, what happened to you in the past is not your problem today. It's not what's causing all your trauma or your upset or your fear or your loneliness or your need to control. That's not what's doing that. What's causing all of that is what you believe to be true about what happened to you as a child.
That's good.
Or 5 years ago or 5 days ago. It's what you believe to be true about it that is your upset today. Yeah, Deborah.
Okay, he's really going deep on this with me. So, again, so when you say trying to change others' behavior is illegal, it's like witchcraft. So what came to me was how we can use unsanctified mercy to try and change somebody else's behavior as well. right?
Yeah.
And so that would look like, so the two verses that came to me, obedience is better than sacrifice. We all know what happened in that one with the bleeding of the cows. And then when we're not obeying, we're in rebellion, and rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft.
Absolutely.
Those two verses just popped out. So if we're not operating in mercy under his authority and what he tells us to, we're going to move into that manipulation, which is still trying, I'm just going to sacrifice. I'm just going to be that kind person that they never had so that they will change their behavior. I've walked into witchcraft.
Yep. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
100%. All right. Number five, seek more help if necessary. We all need help from time to time. Do whatever it takes to encounter the Lord and get the help that you need. But you have to be open for that. All of us need people in our lives who know us so well that they can see when we aren't being ourselves. People who love us enough to ask questions, come alongside of us, and remind us who we are and whose we are. Our identity is never to be found in what we do, but in being the person Yahweh made us to be. That's where your identity is. All right, this is a concise review, summary of fast track, slow track right here. Just to remind us, the fast track's primary function is our relational identity. The executive fast track looks for joy and amplifies relationships and identity, who we are and what matters to us and what motivates us even when life is difficult. The slow track, which is conscious thought, amplifies problems as it processes our experiences. The slow track always focuses on the problem in the same way that the fast track always focuses on relational identity, both personally and with the group. When the fast track executive system in the right brain is impaired, the slow track verbal problem solving left brain assistant goes into uncontrolled amplification of the problem, and that problem will consume you. And trying to resolve it or solve it will consume you. Both fast and slow track brain systems are very flexible gray matter. Therefore slow, which is a laugh because there's nothing slow about it, but in relation it's slow. The brain has a bullet train that is up to 200 times faster than your fast and slow track, which is white matter. That's what we talked about that forms a habit. It gets, that information gets wrapped with white matter in the brain and it causes it to function even faster. The brain has a bullet train that's up to 200 times faster, which is white matter. Unlike the gray matter that can change its response several times a second, white matter takes about a month to develop and is reserved for functions we repeat often, but always do the same way. So that's important. For us to form a habit, we have to do it often and the same way. So if I want to develop a relational skill that I'm weak in or lacking in, then what I'm after is to form this white matter in my brain so that I will automatically respond the same way when I'm in a situation like that. And the way to do that is to practice that relational skill for 30 plus days. You actually keep on doing it intentionally, and you do it the same way, Christ-like way, that sticky love way. That means anything we adopt for building fast track skills needs to be done repetitively over a long period of time. When this happens, our brain will respond rapidly to all sorts of situations with the good pattern, the good habit that has been trained into our brain. Without training, our negative responses will always precede any positive response. So if we don't train our brain, then our brain's going to respond negatively because it's wired into us because of the fall.
This is a t-shirt,
train your brain. Sticky love marshmallow.
White matter matters.
White matter matters. That's a good one. Okay, that's another one of those summary paragraphs for us to remember. If you need it abbreviated, there it is for you.
Thank you.
Return to joy.
That's what
I'm trying to do here at the end, is to give you this overview of everything that we've been talking about. Colossians 3:15, Paul says, "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts." The Greek word translated rule is best described as referee. Yeah. So that verse says, "Let the peace of Christ referee in your hearts." Mm-hmm. What would that look like? What happens when a referee blows his whistle? Everything stops until the referee sorts it out. In the same way, if I'm not feeling peace in a group, it's time to stop until everyone returns to joy.
Beautiful.
The most important indicator of a group's emotional health is its ability to return to joy. That sense of I'm glad to be together. Because you know, we're going to have upsetting emotions and situations in a group. And that's not a problem as long as you've created the relational skills so that you can return to joy quickly. The more often upsetting emotions happen in a group, the stronger both the leader and the group become, as long as they return to joy quickly. How do we accomplish this relational skill? The first step is to simply accept the fact that we have emotions. And once we accept them, we are then able to calm ourselves quickly. Don't deny them, don't stuff them, don't try to paint them up, make them look pretty, and don't blame somebody else for your emotions. Your negative emotions. Anger is one of those. To return to joy from anger is not to get rid of the anger, but to remain relational and act like myself even when I'm angry. If I have this skill, I will still value you equally as much when I'm angry as when I'm happy with you, and I'll be able to remain my true self during times of anger. Most of the time, when we're angry, we just want the problem to go away and we want that relationship to take a back seat because we view the relationship as the problem. Mature leaders are able to quiet themselves and keep the relationship more important than the problem. Instead of taking out my anger on the person and using my anger against them, I acknowledge my anger, continue to value the person, and address the problem while keeping our relationship as the most important thing. That's the relational sandwich. James 1:19 and 20 says, "For this you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God." Proverbs 15:1. "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." And that's usually true. Now, there's times when you can respond gently to somebody that's angry and they blow up even more. This isn't a law here, but it definitely has value, and you're way safer to respond with a gentle answer than to respond with harsh words. When you feel angry, one of the simplest things you can do is simply take a breath, stop, and listen. Listen to your internal dialogue. Ask Yahweh for his help. By connecting with Yahweh, it gives your relational circuits a chance to reconnect. Because if you're angry, your relational circuits are offline. Once you're ready to connect with your friend, the person that you're angry with, it's a good idea to start the conversation with something like this. Let me see if I understand, or can you help me understand what it is that you're trying to say? Is there a problem? And are you saying that I'm the problem, that it's my fault? And you're not doing that in a sarcastic way. You're genuinely expressing, you would proceed that with, our relationship is so important to me that I really want to understand. Can you help me understand what happened here or what's the problem? Yeah, put it in your own words. This is just a general. Hopefully by doing this, it will help diffuse the accusations. It might not. That person's still triggered. They're liable to blow up at you again. And you know that it's helpful to ask, if you know they're triggered, it's helpful to ask, is this a good time for us to talk, or would you prefer we talk about this tomorrow? You know, because you want to honor them and not force them or make them feel like they don't have a choice. If you do that, you're going to create a more angry person. Fear. Sometimes the fear is having to face a person who scares you. Sometimes it's the fear of dealing with people while facing the threat that things might fall apart and you might lose that friend. At other times, the fear may be facing a situation that triggers the fear of failure. Stay relational with Yahweh and with someone that you trust while you're trying to work this out, this fear issue. Normally when people are triggered by fear, they stop being concerned about other people and they only think about themselves and their situation, their predicament. So, all right, let's talk about the VCR that you have inside your brain. The skill, hopefully you have this, the skills of validation, comfort, and repattern, VCR. They're critical if we're to return to joy from unpleasant emotions. This is a repeat after me form of learning that repatterns the way our brain speaks to itself. When we speak aloud, our brain repatterns itself. So it's valid to talk to yourself. Danny should be in the Guinness World Book of Records for people that talk to themselves. He has whole conversations with himself. I mean, I'll be in our room and I hear him out there and I think, wonder who's here? And I open the door and there's nobody there but me, myself, and I, Danny. And he's answering himself. I mean, it's pretty, he's done this now for almost, since I've known him 50 years. He talks and answers and conversates and gets opinions from himself. And it's wonderful.
Sometimes you need to hear it out loud.
Thankfully, it's positive, you know. Thankfully, he's always been a positive person and not a negative. That'd be really dangerous if he was negative against himself, etc. Yeah, Josh.
Oh, I do it too, quite often. It helps a lot to just hear what I'm thinking out loud and just bounce ideas around in my own head and out loud and just hear it bounce around.
Absolutely. And that's actually true for everybody in here, even if you don't do it. It, your brain, the way it's wired, listens to you. Remember what I said, your brain is hardwired to grow and multiply. So whatever you're thinking, whatever you're speaking especially, your brain takes that and says, oh, let's grow and multiply this truth. And that's why when I find myself saying, I'm sorry, I've stopped it, because if you've ever been told you're a sorry, blanky, blank, blank, your brain immediately pulls that file up and it will grow and multiply that. So now I say, I'm actually a wonderful person when I find myself saying that. So because speaking it out loud is more powerful than just thinking it. So if you want to retrain your brain, number one, speak out loud. Talk to yourself. Tell yourself what Yahweh says about you. Not what you think about you, not what somebody else says about you, but what Yahweh says about you. And he says he's sticky in love with you. And that you're a wonderful person. And that you're his son, his daughter, etc. Just say it out loud. And if you'll do that for consistently in the same way over 30 days, you're going to wrap that truth in white matter, and it'll become autopilot the way you think.
Yeah.
It's the most effective way I know of breaking a habit, where you've gotten in the habit of fill in the blank. Gotten in the habit of running to food for comfort. Self-harm, all forms. Anger to keep people away from you. People use anger to keep others from getting in their hula hoop. They think that they're protecting themselves, and they just don't understand how much they're hurting themselves. So any of those things, begin to speak out loud the truth. I love Yahweh more than I love chocolate chip cookies. I had that experience way back 20 whatever years ago. We had adopted two girls, and I had promised them I'd make them chocolate chip cookies for an event. I can't remember what the event was. And so right like a week or something before that, I felt the Lord inviting me to fast, water fast, and I jumped in, and then all of a sudden I remembered, I gotta make 7 dozen chocolate chip cookies. And I'm starving. Right? And I'm telling you what, I baked those cookies, and every time I pulled pan out of the oven, I'd say, I love you, Yahweh, more than I love chocolate chip cookies. And I said it over every time. And when I'd scrape them off the pan and put them to cool and package them up for the girls. And they came home from school, and I'm in there just singing, I love you, Lord, more than I love you. Wow. You know, and they just stand in the doorway like I've lost my mind.
Yeah.
But it works, and I made it. I did. I didn't even eat a crumb. Not even a chocolate chip.
Tasted the dough.
Not even that. Nothing. I didn't lick the spoon. Nothing. So pay attention to what you're thinking, and pay attention to what you're saying to yourself out loud. Begin to say it out loud. Like I said, when we speak out loud, our brain repatterns itself. Speaking validation and words of comfort to ourselves helps us return to joy from upsetting emotions and actually causes your brain to repattern itself. They can be used, you can do this in conversations, in your self-talk. So even when you're talking to somebody, you can speak validation to yourself and for them too. All right, validation. To validate an emotion doesn't mean that you agree with it. It means that you're able to name the emotion, recognize where it originated, and understand the level of intensity. So an example of using your VCR in a relationship would be something like this. I can see, Tammy, I can see that you're upset about what I just said. That's validation. Why don't, would you be open to you and I working this out? That's comfort. And I'm telling her, I really want to keep this relationship that we have. Mm-hmm. Validation and comfort helps people feel understood and greatly helps their fast track elevator to get to the third floor. That's where emotions reside. If you skip the validation and go straight to the correction, you might win that discussion, but you very possibly will lose in that relationship. I had a GE one time. This person was falsely accusing me of XYZ. It was just ridiculous in my world because it wasn't anywhere in my heart what she was saying. And it didn't matter what I said or did, she couldn't see because she was triggered. And at the time, I didn't understand triggers and all of that. So I finally got fed up. I reached my joy capacity limit and told the Lord how I felt about this woman. Mm-hmm. And he said, "That's my daughter that you're talking about." So I shut my mouth. I said, "Okay, Lord, would you show me the truth in me?" And I see this picture. I see myself driving in my car, and I'm going the speed limit, and I'm just enjoying the day, and everything's going great and wonderful, and all is well, shalom. And then I look up, and coming towards me in the opposite lane is a semi truck, and it's flying, it's speeding. And as I'm seeing it, it crosses over the white line and gets in my lane and is coming right at me. And I'm not breaking the law, I'm not doing anything wrong. And that thing's coming right at me, speeding. And the Lord says to me, as I'm looking at it, he says to me, "Rhonda, you're right, but you're going to be dead right." So I had a choice I'm keeping the speed limit. I'm not crossing over the line. I'm in the right place doing the right thing. Wow. That's all true. But if I don't do something, I'm gonna be dead right if I challenge. So I just took my foot off the gas pedal and took my car on another lane and went with the Lord and let that person say anything and everything they wanted to say about me. And I just bless them, just bless them, just bless them. Because if I stood up to her, I was gonna be run over. And I would be right. Sometimes you're right, but it's gonna cost you your Christ-likeness in the process of you proving that you're right or you standing your ground. Now, it's not about self-defense, it's about sticky love and loving somebody enough to let them be wrong. That's hard, especially if you're a justice girl like I am. I am wired for justice. Things need to be right in my world, and that wasn't right. So just remember that Yahweh, think about this, we're supposed to be Christ-like. Yahweh, Yeshua, they don't force anybody or to be anything. They put the invitation out there, the opportunity, and allow us to choose whether we want it or not. And so I can, if I try to force somebody to do what I think they should be doing, I'm in the wrong position. And I know as a wife, I've had to learn this because I'm wired for things need to be right and done with excellence and justice. That if I had an idea in my head that Danny needed to be like XYZ, and he needed to stop doing this, and he needed to start doing that, and I criticized him, which I did, and I made sure he saw what I saw, which I did, I was way out of line. All of that is between him and the Lord. And my responsibility is to love and honor and respect my husband. That's hard when you think that they're not doing things right or that they're doing something wrong. But, you know, us wives, we're not commanded to love our husbands. Our husbands are commanded to love their wives, but we're commanded to respect them. We're not told commanded to love them, but we're commanded to respect them. And the fact that Christ lives in them is enough to respect. And for me to judge my husband makes me God. I don't have that right. And that's tough. That's been a huge battle for me. And not just with Danny, but with people. Because of that strong sense of right and wrong and justice, and it's wired into me by Yahweh. I get to surrender that, get off the throne, stop being a judge, and allow that person to make their own decisions, to choose what they're going to do and not do, to love me or not, value me or not, want to spend time with me or not, etc., etc., etc. And that means I've set them free, and I'm free. If I don't set them free, I'm not free.
Wow.
And Christ came to set us all free. And that's true not just in husbands and wives. That's true in friendships across the board, with our children even. There comes a time with our children, we have to let them go. We have to let them make their own choices, knowing that it's going to hurt them. But that result of them paying that price, yes, is meant to teach them, so the next time they won't do that because it hurt too much or the cost was too high. And that's life. That's the journey we're all on. Amen.
So what you just said, I completely agree with. But help us understand then, when we do everything you just said, but that person is also causing pain in the now, what does my healthy boundary look like to keep myself protected, but also love you, set you free, let you go to make your choices, but your choices also then directly affect me?
Well, people hurt us. We suffer the pain of somebody else's choice often for your relationship, for sure. The main thing is that we hear the Lord and we do what he tells us to do. You know, I've seen wives that their husbands were unfaithful more than once, and the Lord said, stay with them. And they stay with them, and then 10 years, 20 years, whatever, something else, and the Lord says, let them go. It's critical that we hear the Lord and we do what he tells us to do. And that doesn't mean you stop loving them. That doesn't mean you stop blessing them and praying for them. You do whatever he tells you to do. For some people, they have to just shut the door and walk away and not pray for them even. I've heard the Lord tell people, don't pray for them right now. Don't, you just let them go. Let them go. This thing called surrender is a tough walk, but it is what the Lord's after. He's after, I believe, number one, trust. And you're not going to surrender unless you trust somebody. If you don't trust the Lord, you're not going to surrender. So if you're having trouble surrendering something, whatever it might be, don't focus on trying to get over that. Step back and say, Lord, I don't trust you. I don't trust you here in this area. Now, you might trust him in that one.
Sure.
But right here, right now, I don't trust you because I can't surrender this. Mm. Be honest. Be real. He knows it anyway.
Right.
And ask for his help. Again, we try so hard to do things our own selves, you know, And the truth is, we can't. Without Christ in us, none of us would be Christ-like.
We self-protect from Yahweh.
We self-protect from anything that we feel threatened by.
But I mean, yeah, but he knows everything, yeah. And we're self-protecting.
You bet we self-protect from Yahweh at times in many different situations. So, amen. Oh, okay, so let's, yeah, wow is right.
Wow.
And again, like I said yesterday, most of us don't want to look at just how weak and broken we really are. So we don't, and we tell ourselves a story. And that's not helpful. Okay? Let's go down to comfort. After validating somebody, then we offer comfort. The main way to offer comfort to ourselves and others is by providing a different perspective or alternative. Comfort lets everyone know that the problem might appear large, but Yahweh is bigger, and so is our group identity. In other words, you express, we can do this. Our relationship's strong enough, we can weather this storm. That's comfort. Repatterning takes place when validating and comforting becomes the new pattern that guides our responses to painful and upsetting emotions. If we don't learn to quiet ourselves through validation and comfort, our upsetting emotions will tend to grow as we focus on the problem. When we begin the new process of VCR, we establish a habit which will enable me to instantly almost return to joy, or at least quickly. A gentle protector leader meets people where they are emotionally, finds ways to help them change their perspective or fix their problems, and calls out what is best in them. Leaders who can't do this for themselves won't be able to do it for the people they're leading. Underline it, highlight it. If you can't do this for yourself, you won't be able to help other people that you're leading to do this. Instead of dealing with the group's emotions, they will either avoid them or try to make them stop, and that will create a toxic environment, and problems will only grow bigger than relationships, and the group will start walking on eggshells. If you've ever felt like you got to walk on eggshells around somebody, now you know why. Returning to joy is most likely the most important habit you can develop as a leader. That truth that I'm glad to be with you, and you have matured to the point with those 19 relational skills that you can go through a storm and stay happy to be with that person that's caused the storm or that's in their storm. Yeah, see why it's a big deal, why it's critical, why it's not optional? And Yeshua modeled it for us. In Gethsemane, he tells Peter, James, and John, stay right here, I'm going to go over there and pray, and you pray. Pray, right? So he goes and he prays, and he's sweating buckets, and blood is mixed with his sweat, he's in so much agony, and he comes back and he finds them sound asleep. He's still glad to be with them. And I'd have told him off. I was like, hey, guys, you don't understand what's coming down.
Right?
You're about to be tested like you've never been tested before. I said, wake up
That's
and
right.
pray.
Yeah.
Because you're going to enter into temptation. I would have told him. I was so straight. I know me. Because I would have been triggered as soon as I saw they were asleep. Before I even got to them, I'd have seen it and been. Whew. Anyway, but he didn't. He was a gentle protector. Then he goes back, goes through the same thing, and he gets up to go check on his boys. And they're asleep.
Yeah.
Again. Now, I really would have told him a thing or two. So, he didn't. That's our model. That's who we're told to emulate. And I'm a long way from there, but I'm headed there. Okay, let's talk about this beautiful thing called suffering. We think we're suffering, but I don't think we know what suffering really is yet. But I believe we possibly might. We all get to suffer in this life. Those who learn to deal with hardships well will grow in maturity. Yeshua modeled how to suffer well by his life. And here's a few examples. He endured being slapped, spit on, beaten with fists and whips without being triggered. He remembered his mother and arranged for John to take care of her as he's hanging on that cross. He forgave those who were crucifying him. He was relational with the thief beside him and remained true to being the Redeemer. He remained relational with his Father through it all, even when he couldn't perceive Yahweh's presence. My God, why have you forsaken me? That's amazing. If anybody had a right to be triggered, it was him. And those are just a few. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. Yeshua wasn't the only one to respond well to suffering. If we look at the Apostle Paul and look at Stephen, who was the first martyr, look at all of the apostles. If you read Hebrews 11, we call that Heroes of the Faith. It describes those who suffered well. And 2 Timothy 1:8 says, "Therefore, do not be ashamed of either the witness about our Lord or me, his prisoner, but join with me in suffering for the gospel according to the power of Yahweh." James 5:13, "Is anyone among you suffering? Then he must pray. Is anyone cheerful? He is to sing praises." 1 Peter 2:19-20, "For this finds favor, if for the sake of conscience toward God, a person bears up under sorrows when suffering unrighteously. For what credit is there if, when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this finds favor with God." 1 Peter 5:9, "But resist him firm in the faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished among your brethren who are in the world." Joy is not a method for escaping or avoiding pain. Joy is what enables us to suffer well. Joy reminds us that we are never alone in our pain. Joy reminds us that those who share our suffering will show us how to remember who we are when things are difficult. That's why it's one of the reasons it's so important to be part of a group, an identity group. Capacity. How much stress can you handle before you turn into somebody that you're not? Emotional capacity is best defined as how much stress you can handle before you blow up or melt down. When your emotional capacity is overwhelmed, trauma occurs and your ability to endure suffering gets sidetracked. Trauma stunts the development of our joy capacity. I'm a gardener. Sometimes a plant gets stressed. Any number of things can cause it. If somebody stops watering it, or allows it to get too cold, or too hot, or puts it in a dark room. In the same way, when we withhold the good things a child needs, it stresses them. That's called trauma. Their emotional growth gets stunted when they don't receive unconditional love, etc. You don't have to be physically abused to have some pretty big holes in your maturity development. And the truth is, not one of us had perfect parents or families. When all goes well, an infant grows to become a child, then an adult, then a parent, then finally elders. When that healthy process of maturing is disrupted by abuse, neglect, or tragedy, the results can be devastating to the brain's development, especially if they're young. Let's look at these five levels of emotional maturity. I've been talking about them. Number one, infant level maturity. Infants don't know how to take care of themselves, but they're really good at letting you know they're upset, right? They fuss and cry in all sorts of ways day and night. It's up to the parent to figure out what's wrong and meet their needs. This is normal behavior for babies, but not for adults. Babies cry, and we, as a parent, go through the checklist. Are they hungry, tired, teething, or need a diaper change? Babies can't tell you what's wrong. All they know is to fuss about it. It's the same way with adults who are stuck at infant level maturity. You can be 70 years old and still act like an infant. These are people who simply make their displeasure known and are really good at expressing how upset they are. People around the infant leader have to learn to read him or her and anticipate their wishes, because that leader isn't going to tell you what they need or how to fix any problems. And they certainly aren't going to make treating you well a priority over whatever negative emotion they might be feeling about the problem. Child level maturity. During childhood is when we're supposed to learn how to take care of ourselves. A child expands their skills and explores the world around them. In doing so, they learn their place in the world, their identity. They learn who their people are, their families and their friends, belonging and identity. And they learn how to act like themselves in ways that gets their needs met. A child is supposed to learn how to take care of one person, themselves. They don't have the ability to take care of themselves and another person at the same time. An adult with a child level maturity is good at saying, I need someone to make me supper, to get me coffee, to make sure I get my needs met. And they're not terribly good at remaining relational when they're problem solving. They aren't good at meeting the needs of others in their group. Some child leaders do just the opposite. Whoever has the need gets the care at the expense of self, family, and everyone else involved. It's good for you to be thinking about yourself while we're reading this. What maturity level are you at? Adult level. Adults know how to keep relationships bigger than problems. They act like themselves in a group, and they take care of the needs of two people at the same time. Because they've practiced building joy skills for a long time, the adult is emotionally stable and relationally sophisticated enough to stay relational in the face of upset. You will rarely, if ever, see an adult maturity level person turn to an addictive behavior to cope when they're stressed. Parent level maturity. Once parents have practiced the joy skills of remaining relational, acting like themselves, and returning to joy from upsetting emotions for several years, they will likely feel ready for a bigger challenge, parenting. They are to teach and model the joy fast-track skills to the next generation. Elder level maturity. When parents have finished raising their own children, they are ready to take on the needs of the community. They notice when people in their group are lacking joy skills. These aren't necessarily elders in the church, but people who have matured and are able to pour into the next generation. If you're going to build white matter in your brain that operates 200 times faster than gray matter, it's important to make sure we build white matter around the habits of emotional maturity and not emotional immaturity. Here's five steps on building white matter habits in your brain. Number one, practice appreciation for 15 minutes every day, and do this aloud, speak it out. take 5 minutes, 3 times a day, to simply think about what makes you happy. The more time you spend in appreciation, the more your joy capacity will grow. Number 3, get your thoughts in sync with Yahweh's thoughts. Our ability to express peace depends on our ability to be single-minded. When my thoughts are going right and Yahweh's thoughts are going left, I am going to be double-minded, which means I will be unstable in all my ways. Number 4, identify what drains your joy, such as sickness, lack of sleep, lack of exercise, poor diet, relational issues, unresolved problems, recent loss, etc. Recognizing that something has drained our joy means that we need to do something to refuel our joy tank. Ask yourself, what is life giving to you? And do it. Number 5, avoid joy substitutes. These are addictions, not just to drugs or alcohol, but to any and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Avoid those things. Avoid your beeps. Don't give them a place in your life. Things such as food, substances, entertainment, internet, phone, people, adrenaline, pornography, shopping, starving yourself, self-harm, beating yourself up verbally, mentally, etc., etc. There's so much. Stop it. Just don't allow it. When you find yourself going down that path, start saying out loud what you're thankful for. And remember to validate yourself and comfort yourself out loud, aloud. There's the reminder of what beeps are: behaviors, events, experiences, people, and substances. Those are idols. If you give in to these, you're actually bowing down to a little G God. We've kind of softened the blow on this because it's so acceptable in our society to be self-focused and to do what we want to do and to comfort ourselves by eating or not eating or running. And I'm not saying eating and not eating and running is sin. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about when you use these, whatever they might be, these beeps, to comfort yourself, to control, to make you feel better, to make you look better, to make you fill in the blank, whatever it might be serving, then you are actually worshiping that thing. That thing takes Yahweh's place. And again, we've just so softened that. In the Bible, have you ever stopped to think about how often Yahweh talks about idolatry? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's everywhere, especially in the Old Testament. And yet, if we're not careful, an idol is anything that we put in the place of Yahweh. It can be ourselves. We can become our own idol. All right. We are going to stop, and then tomorrow we'll finish up on this with assessing emotional maturity. We are almost finished with this, Lynn. That was good. Our friend. Any questions, comments? Deborah.
Okay. So.
So another thing that jumped out that he's connecting for me is under child level maturity, that one little simple phrase, at the same time. So when, this is just connecting in my head, so I'm gonna process and put it out there for review, and if this is a correct posit. When as an adult, we are not able to take good care of ourselves while we're taking good care of the other person, we're actually going back to a trauma-based We avoid taking care of ourselves because as a child, if we were raised in a household where it was not emotionally stable, and you learn very quickly to be the peacekeeper, or you learn very quickly to take care of the adult in the room because they couldn't take care of themselves, and you learn that that's what you had to do to not receive the blows or the verbal blows, then you quickly go to deferring taking care of yourself to the other person. And if I've never learned to take care of both of them simultaneously, I'm going to neglect myself. And I'm just going to be always giving, 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 which on the outside looks good, like you're a sacrificial type person.
Right.
But you're really reverting to that childlike behavior in that to keep from getting what you used to get as a child.
Absolutely, 100% true. And remember when we talked about gentle protectors, one of the things about a gentle protector is they know how to take good care of themselves.
Yes. Simultaneously.
While they're taking good care
yes.
of you
yes.
and their people. Excellent.
Both.
Any other comments, questions, thoughts? Complaints.
Complaints.
We were there for